Today, I, Faith Stevens, will be telling you the story of Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker. Everyone likes a good souvenir, especially when there's a notorious story behind it, and that is what people tried to get on May 23, 1934, on a Louisiana state highway south of Gibbsland towards Sales after the ambush on Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker. The life of both Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow were not an easy one, and ever since they were young, they've had it hard. I'm going to start off by telling Clyde's story.
Clyde Chestnut Barrow was born in the Texas Cotton Belt on March 24, 1909. One of seven children of itinerant farmers Henry and Cumy Barrow. By 1925, the whole Barrow clan had followed a wave of other farmers who were flooding cities in search of work. With all their worldly possessions packed into a horse-drawn cart, the Barrows settled on the outskirts of Dallas, in an impoverished backwater known as the Devil's Back Porch.
Clyde Barrow grew up in an unincorporated slum, so poverty-stricken we couldn't imagine it today. And there's a campground right on the west bank of the Trinity River, and it's mostly mud, and there's one well, there's a few outhouses, and this is where the indigent lived.
My grandfather and grandmother, they were just poor people trying to survive. And they camped out there in just that wagon, that little mule. And that's how they lived. No money, no food, just poor as you could be.
So from the time this kid can really think, all he knows is there's no hope. This is it. I'm going to be poor, I'm going to be hungry, I'm going to be put down the rest of my life.
So as you heard, Clyde had a hard life, but Bonnie didn't have a perfect childhood either. Bonnie Elizabeth Parker was born in 1910 in Rowena, Texas. She was the second out of three kids, and her father Charles Parker died when she was only four. So her mother Emma Parker moved them back to West Dallas, which was also known as Cement City. In September 1926, Bonnie dropped out of high school and got married at the early age of 16 to Roy Thornton. But it didn't last long. He ended up in jail, and after that they never saw each other again. Though they never got divorced, and when she died, she was still wearing her wedding ring. Bonnie also had a love of writing poetry, and some of them became well known, like Where the Trails End, which ended up being the story of Bonnie and Clyde. For these two criminals, their first crimes were simple ones. For Clyde, it started out by stealing chickens, and as he got older, the crimes got more severe. This eventually got him into the East Hem prison farm in 1930, at the age of 21, and this was the turning point for him. His first kill was a fellow prisoner who had sexually assaulted him many times, and he killed him with a lead pipe, and another inmate took the blame for the murder. With the help from Bonnie, he managed to escape, but he was caught again, and he didn't get out until 1932, and when he did, he was changed into a hardened criminal who was out for revenge against the Texas prison system. But for Bonnie, she didn't really have a crime habit until she met Clyde, in which she would help him with robberies and prison breaks. Before their deaths, they had managed to kill a total of 9 lawmen, but overall, they were believed to have killed 13 people. For these two, their last crime was their most notorious. The East Ham prison breakout on January 16, 1934 was the beginning of the end for the pair. They had broken out Ramald Hamilton and Henry Methvin, as well as others. But these two were the most important ones, and, unknowing at the time, Henry Methvin would later be the death of Bonnie and Clyde. But by breaking these two out, Clyde managed to finally have the revenge he always wanted on the Texas justice system. But by doing so, he had put a tail on them that would follow them all the way from Texas.
Was put on their case. He was a retired Texas Ranger who had 53 kills and had taken down several criminals in his past. And as of February 10th, he was continually one step behind the gang. On April 1st, 1934, two highway patrolmen were shot and killed by Barrow and Methvin. The witnesses said that Bonnie was responsible for killing one of the patrolmen, but this was not true according to Methvin. who had stated that she was going to help the man who had been shot and not kill him like the eyewitness had said. But other reports also said that she was asleep in the back of the car when all of this happened. After these killings, the story of Bonnie and Clyde grew more and more, but for Bonnie, it had affected her most. News reports would say that she had laughed at the way the patrolman's head bounced like a rubber ball after she shot him. Not only that, but reports that the police said that they had found a cigar with tiny teeth marks that must have belonged to Bonnie Parker at a crime scene, when really, she didn't smoke cigars at all. And the story of how the fiancé of one of the patrolmen wore her wedding dress to his funeral all started to stir massive negativity toward the gang, and surprisingly, toward Bonnie more so than the rest.
Barrow Gang was scheduled to visit Henry Methvin's family, based on the way that they'd said traveled, centering around family visits. Frank Hammer figured this out and raced to Louisiana. He managed to get Henry's father to help him with capturing the duo, but he would only do so if his son Henry could get away unharmed. Hammer agreed to this and they began the wait. They put Henry's father on the side of the road so that it would cause Barrow to get closer to the group of officers that had helped Hammer. There was a total of 6 men, 4 of which were Texas officers and 2 were Louisiana officers. The group of men set up on May 21st, though some say it was the evening of May 22nd along a Louisiana State Highway, 154 south of Gippsland, and there the men waited for Bonnie and Parker to come. On May 23rd, the duo met their death. As they were driving, they slowed to talk with Methvin's father, who was set up on the side of the road. The lawman immediately opened fire on the car and the criminals. The men killed them both and shot a total of 130 rounds into the car. Oakley, one of the officers, shot first, and it was the initial shot that killed Barrow. There was reports from one of the other officers who had said he had heard Bonnie scream when she saw Clyde dead before she was shot herself. The officers had emptied out all of their guns on the car and the pair. Even though the first couple of shots would have been enough, researchers said that the two were shot more than 50 times each. While this varies from 50 to 25 rounds in each body, it is actually 17 separate wounds on Barrow and 26 on Parker. When the shooting was done, the men began to go through the car. Inside, they had found loads of weapons and several thousand rounds of ammunition, along with 50 in license plates from different states. The death of these two spread very quickly when Hammer and 3 of the other officers went into town. A massive crowd soon began to gather at the crime scene, and with only 2 other officers to keep the people back, things got out of hand very quickly. One woman had managed to cut off bloody pieces of Bonnie's hair as well as pieces of her dress. These ended up being sold as souvenirs. One of the officers named Tom Hinton got back. He saw a man trying to cut off Clyde Barrow's trigger finger. When the coroner arrived at the crime scene, he had said this. Nearly everyone had begun collecting souvenirs, such as shell casings, slivers of glass from the shattered car windows, and bloody pieces of clothing from garments of Bonnie and Clyde. One eager man had opened his pocket knife and was reaching into the car to cut off Clyde's left ear. Now, could you imagine what was going on through these officers' heads as they tried to keep people back from the pair? If it was me, I would have been horrified and disgusted by what was happening, because not long before, people treating Bonnie and Clyde like they were famous, and now they were cutting off pieces for themselves so they could make money. After their death, Bonnie and Clyde had wanted to be buried next to each other, but that didn't happen because of Mrs. Parker, Bonnie's mother, who would not allow it. Bonnie was actually supposed to be taken back home to be buried, but that couldn't happen because of the huge groups of people who had gathered outside their home. There was more than 20,000 people who had attended Bonnie Parker's funeral. For Clyde, he was buried beside his brother Marvin, and together they shared a single grave marker with the words, "Gone, but not forgotten." Thousands had shown up to get a glimpse of Clyde Barrow and his death. With the death of these two, it had sold more than 500,000 newspapers in Dallas alone. And with the death of Bonnie and Clyde came the beginning of the end of the public enemy era of the 1930s, and with it, federal laws changed to make robbing and kidnapping federal offenses. Their deaths also made it harder for criminals to get away with crimes, now that there was growing coordination with the FBI and 2A radios in all police vehicles. Now, after 85 years, the story of Bonnie and Clyde is something that still intrigues people, though I don't think that they thought that their names would forever be recognized for years to come. But as the gravestone of Clyde Barrow says, "Gone but not forgotten," is definitely true. I hope you enjoyed listening to the story of Bonnie and Clyde, told by me, Faith Stevens. Good day.